This is the Oanda Podcast.
This is the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, talking to Oanda senior market analysts across the globe. And today, I'm delighted to say it is Ed Moyer in New York. Good evening from London, Ed. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me. It's been quite the week for all asset classes.
Yeah, and let's start with one particular roller coaster ride. That, of course, is Bitcoin. The price on Tuesday crashed to its lowest in nearly a month. And this tied in with the angry protests and the technological glitches and a plummet in market value for the first day of Bitcoin in El Salvador, adopting the currency as legal tender. It was all quite dramatic, wasn't it?
Bitcoin did have a wild ride, and I think in addition to a disappointing rollout for El Salvador, we had a tremendous amount of speculative excess. I think there was a lot of retail buying that was in anticipation of this rollout that we saw investors were really eyeing a significant move higher. And when we really didn't see that, I think then you saw pretty much momentum sellers just quickly took advantage of it. And I think there was a lot of reasons why people sold Bitcoin. I think there was, first, the rollout was terrible for the app. I think they have they had a lot of people tracking, was the adoption a success in El Salvador? And for the most part, there was limited use of those 200 ATMs that have been put in El Salvador. Without widespread use, I think you're seeing that more people are focused on the protests against the embracement of Bitcoin for El Salvador. And I think you're probably going to see that this is a big bet by the government. And even the president, during the, the chaotic sell-off that we saw, 17% plunge, there was a tweet that he then sent that said they bought the dip. And then they increased their holdings by another 150 Bitcoin. So I think you're probably going to see that, this is going to remain a very volatile trade. And in addition to what we had with El Salvador, it seems that the social media platforms are just constantly filled with this coverage. In addition to what happened in El Salvador, we heard from some social media influencers, whether it was Steph Curry, one of the best shooting guards in the NBA, asking, "I'm about to get into crypto, what should I do?" And then you have constant interest from people who are in the space advising him what to do, and then he forms a new partnership, which just shows the retail frenzy is going to continue. And I think it really hit a moment at the beginning of the week when the FCA had to step in and acknowledge that Kim Kardashian tweet of endorsing a new crypto coin, Ethereum Max, which I never heard of until that tweet, was going to, she was trying to incentivize people to look at it. And it was, I think, it draw concern from the FCA, and they even stepped up and reminding the financial world that there is a lot of scams out there, and a lot of these coins are going to end up being worthless. So I think there has been a fresh, new wave of investors, and I think that's what's really provided a lot of this volatility. And right now, we're trying to see if mainstream acceptance is going to happen. And when you take a look at what's happening around the world, there is continued progress for Bitcoin. Prices, they've stabilized from that initial plunge from the disappointing El Salvador debut, but for the most part, they're still heavy. And this is even as the Ukraine becomes the latest country to legalize Bitcoin as a cryptocurrency. We're currently seeing five countries that have outlined some ground rules that are allowing cryptocurrencies to thrive, and this is going to be a long, tedious process. And until we see widespread use, you're likely to see a very choppy market here. And right now, investors, they can't get beyond the next big risk event for cryptocurrencies, and that's the Fed's paper on digital currencies. And that should be coming out anytime soon.
So I was going to ask you whether the El Salvador example of adopting Bitcoin was going to encourage or discourage other countries to follow suit. Probably encourage more than discourage at the moment, despite the rocky start at the beginning of the week.
I think so. I think you're right, because everyone knows the first time you do something, there's going to be bumps and bruises. There's a learning curve. And I think every country that sees where El Salvador went wrong, they're going to try to address those issues. And I think that you're probably going to see that countries that will legalize Bitcoin, I think they're going to have a much more cautious approach. They're going to probably, in addition to owning, Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, they're going to make sure that they provide ample education for these new users. And I think that there's a big learning curve. I think right now the growth for Bitcoin is going to be amongst developing nations. I think you're going to see that you're probably going to see the next round of countries that go this route are going to be Latin America or Africa. I think that's where you're probably going to see the primary growth for this space. And in a lot of those areas, they need more education, they need more support, they need more tools to help transition into a digital economy. And I think that it's probably going to, I think what happened in El Salvador is still very positive for the space, but I think it will kind of stretch out the plans on how soon other countries follow suit. But I think there's still tremendous momentum here. And right now, there's probably a lot of investors that are just taking a look at, what was the primary tenet for many people for owning cryptocurrencies. It's because fiat currencies and the governments that are, delivering these extraordinary fiscal supportive measures are likely to devalue their currencies. And with the Fed and the ECB really kind of just showing signs that we're still going to have a lot of accommodation remain in pumping up these economies, the argument for Bitcoin is still pretty sound.
I wanted to talk to you about China, Ed, and the fact that it's starting to sell off some of its oil that it keeps in strategic reserve in a bid to lower prices in the market. Now, that is a historic first for the world's biggest importer of oil and its second largest consumer, is it not?
Very much so. And I think this shows you how I think sensitive these global economic recoveries are. China, for the most part, I think they really, paid close attention to what OPEC Plus said earlier in the week. And OPEC Plus, for the most part, has resisted those calls to increase output. And this move, it sent crude sharply lower. And I think it shows you that, China is willing to do anything right now to support their economy. And in addition to that, I think that they have these reserves and they're finally putting them to use. And I think that this is really going to help bring down some of those inflationary pressures, which I think have been really, it's been a very wild trade across all the commodity markets. And I think that you're probably going to see that, China, they're right now in their economic growth forecasts, just like the rest of the world, have taken a bit of a hit. And I think you're going to see that they're going to do what is going to, I think, help bridge the gap until their economy can kind of continue to grow as it has been. And right now, I think you're going to see the oil market right now, it's still in deficit. And it's expected to be in deficit for the remainder of the year. And I think we won't see a surplus until probably the first quarter, if things unfold as far as the reopening. But right now, I think this market is has been dealing with so many different drivers where we have production that has not come back online from Hurricane Ida. We have, I think right now there's a lot of fear that expectations for OPEC Plus output, you know, for beyond 2022 are really up in the air. No one has a strong handle on when we're going to have those Iran nuclear talks resume and if we're going to see sanctions eased up on and if we could expect more crude from them. And right now there's some protests happening in Libya. That production could provide an easily $2 surge here for oil prices. So right now it just seems like everything is all of a sudden, the risks are to the upside for oil prices. And I think the only thing that would derail that is if we had a major risk aversion move in the market. And for right now, we really haven't seen that. I think there's been 213 days since we had at least a 5% pullback in the S&P 500. And with risk appetite, you know, remaining well supported, and this is, you know, as we're looking to see if the S&P 500 can break a three-day losing streak that has sent us roughly 1.5% from the record highs, you know, I think there's still, I think, a strong optimism that risk appetite will remain in place as the reopening continues, as the Fed remains accommodative, and that should be, you know, rather supportive for oil prices. So I think a lot of traders, they were happy to buy that dip that China triggered, and it'll be interesting to see if oil prices can kind of recapture the $70 level that is for WTI to get the summer highs that we saw earlier a few months ago.
So earlier on in the week, we heard from the ECB, Ed, the European Central Bank. What did we learn?
A lot of it went as expected. The ECB decided to moderately lower the pace of bond purchases until that pandemic program has run its course. I think that there is still, the reaction was pretty interesting because Lagarde had to say that the lady isn't tapering. I think that the initial headlines when when you read the script, it was really I think initial reaction was that, wow, you know, we're starting to see less stimulus in place, but now that's just a slower pace, a purchase pace, that is, and it's a recalibration. The lady isn't tapering, as she said, and right now I think you're probably going to see that for the most part though, we're still going to see, I think, investors are not going to anticipate tightening anytime soon. The central bank upgraded the outlook for economic growth, but, you know, the inflation forecast for 2023 was only raised to 1.5%. So it's well below the ECB's minimum target of 2%. So I think that for the most part, you know, after the dust settled, it was kind of somewhat viewed as somewhat dovish. And I think that is going to provide some underlying support here for European equities. And right now you're probably going to just really see, I think Wall Street is slowly, you know, kind of downgrading their outlooks for the Treasury curve to steep. And I think that, you know, hopes that we were going to see the German Bund, actually turn flat at some point in the near future are fading away. I think that the 10-year at negative 0.33 is it's still surprising that, you know, given how strong the economy is, that you're still negative interest there. So I think overall dovish takeaway, and really we're in wait and see mode, and I think the council is, they're just focused on the recovery, and right now it's just wait and see for the next several months here.
Okay, very interesting. Let's take a look at what's happening in the next week or so. Of course, this was a short week for you guys because you had Labor Day on Monday, didn't you? But back to reality, I'm afraid, next week with a full working week. So what should we look ahead to?
Well, I think Monday we're going to see the Senate return. So that it's going to be filled with politics. It's going to be filled with, I think, a lot of focus on infrastructure spending, the budget bill, what concessions will be made, and you know, we're getting closer to that, you know, the deadline to get this done. So I think investors will pay close attention there. Tuesday, we got CPI for the U.S. That is going to be key. That could provide, that's probably the main economic release of the week. I think pricing pressures are the one thing that can make the Fed move a lot sooner. And right now, expectations for core, it's supposed to stay steady. So just prices are still elevated, but it'll be interesting to see if they come out hotter, just like we saw PPI earlier today. Wednesday is a busy day. We have the U.S. and European industrial production economic releases. We also have the EIA crude oil inventory report. I did forget to mention, I think on Monday we'll get the OPEC monthly report, which could see a downgrade to the 2022 demand outlook. So that should be priced in already, but if the outlook is downgraded significantly, you know, that could be a little bit of a headwind here for oil prices. Thursday, it's retail sales for the U.S., and then Friday, European CPI and also the University of Michigan sentiment reading. That's the preliminary reading for September, so that one will be closely watched. I think overall, busy week as far as politics in the EU. We have an election from Norway. We hear from the German chancellor candidates. There's a plethora of what Russia will... We'll hear from Russian leaders as well. So it's a very busy week, and I think you're going to see, though, that for the most part, we're in the blackout window for the Fed. So it might be a little bit of a choppy week because a lot of investors will wait until the September policy decision for the Fed, which is the following week.
Okay. Ed, thanks very much for joining us, and have a very good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
This is the Oanda Podcast.